Welcome, everyone, to Redacted on this Thursday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores, navigating this crazy clown world together. On tonight's show, we're going to look at bank runs. The International Monetary Fund, the IMF, releasing a stunning warning about potential bank collapses, bank warnings. And this is just the beginning because of all of the cyber attacks that we're seeing. This is the big red flag. But what happens if you try to go to a bank and just try to get cash out of that bank? This is going to be a new reality as we move into our all digital future.
Right. Dr. Fauci, he won a major award for science and evidence-based decision making. That's funny. You know we can't let that go because we're going to run down all of the decisions that he made and the science that he ignored at the time during the pandemic. All the while, Dr. Phil is saying, hey, they knew better. We need smaller government. I am shocked and amazed by this. We're going to go over it.
And we're also going to look at why Polish farmers are in revolt. Yeah, this is a story you're not going to see in the mainstream media. They're blocking all major points of entry into Ukraine or from Ukraine into Poland. Why are Polish farmers revolting? And why is the president of Poland calling attention to all of the Western influence that's poured into Ukraine? He's a NATO member. What in the world is happening in Poland? We'll get to all of that and more on today's show. Welcome to your Thursday. Good to see all of you here. Yeah, we've got a lot of news to get to. Let us know where you're joining us from around the world. I want to get into this bank run story and digital IDs here in a second because they are trying to take away your cash. This is why I think it's so important right now to make sure that our families have gold. And today's show is brought to you by our friends over at Lear Capital, who can help you get set up with buying silver, with buying gold, gold hitting a new all-time high. But I don't know if you know this, but silver, relatively cheap compared to it, right? It's still about half of its all-time high. We're talking in the $20 range. So you can pick up some silver. So you might look at gold and say, well, that's too expensive. It's $2,400 an ounce now. It was just $1,900 an ounce. I can't afford that right now. But maybe you could convert part of that cash into silver, which is not only a fantastic way to preserve your wealth, but it's also a commodity, silver being used in all sorts of new products, of course, and solar panels and everything else that they need silver for. So our friends at Lear Capital can help you get set up buying precious metals delivered right to your front door. Go to LearRedacted.com. That's LearRedacted.com or call their 800 number, 1-800-613-3557, 1-800-613-3557. And you can receive up to $15,000 in free bonus metals with a qualified purchase. They are fantastic. They're great patriots over there at Lear Capital. So check them out, LearRedacted.com. Well, listen to this story. Imagine walking into your local bank just to get some cash. You need some cash because, I don't know, maybe you want to, you know, pay a babysitter, buy a car, or pay a landscaper. It's cash. You have every right to do it. It's a currency. You should be able to do this. You want to buy a car. It's your right. However, you want to get some cash out of your account. You go to the teller. You walk up to the teller, and the teller then looks at you and gives you some blank stares. I'd like to get some cash out of my account. I need a few thousand dollars. And then the bank teller says, hold on a second. I'll be right back. Walks over to the bank manager, who then comes to you and says, I understand that you want to take some cash out of your account. May I ask what you plan to spend it on?
To which you say, your mama.
Your mom. Yeah, your mom. Yeah, your mama. Your mama. Your mama has an OnlyFans page, and I want to. Well, I don't know, whatever it is. But yeah, none of your friggin' business what I want to spend it on. Right? Yeah. I mean, that's what I would say. I would. My jaw would hit the floor if this happens. I'm sorry. Why is this any of your business? My money is in your bank. I'd like to take my money out of your bank. I want to spend it however I'm going to spend it. That's exactly what's happening at local banks in multiple Western countries, from Australia to the United States to Canada. Sorry, we don't have cash here. You can't take cash out because we simply don't have it. Here's just one example in Canada. This one's gone viral this week, but this is just one of many that we're seeing, where a banker refuses the customer's withdrawal who just wants some cash out of his own account. Watch this.
I can't. Well, wait, I don't understand. What are you talking about?
So I need to give you a bank draft. Or if you're going to get cash, I will need an invoice for a car purchase.
Why? No, I'd like to, it's for, if the car's payment's for in cash, I can't use a bank draft.
Are you buying from like a private?
Yeah, it's private.
Person?
It's literally from my friend.
From your friend?
Yeah, but he wants it in cash.
Can he give you like anything that you're purchasing from him?
How rude.
No, I don't. You don't need that. Bro, what is it? I'm only asking for three. What is this? It's my money. I'm allowed to withdraw from my own bank account.
Yeah, so I can.
You said that. What's the maximum limit you can give a withdrawal to a customer? It's $3,000 on the date. You've already mentioned that multiple times.
Yeah, not today.
Why not today?
Today I would need a bank draw or we're getting invoice.
But why? You need proof of what it is. Why is that? And why is that? Why is that? Why do you need? Why do you need me to tell you what it is? Why do you need? What kind of proof is that? I bring in a note. Like what? How is that? What is that going to change? I don't understand.
So that
you need to give my money. I'm not taking a bank job. I would like cash, please.
Yeah, I won't be able to give you cash.
I won't be able to give you cash
here until you give me cash. So I'm not gonna leave.
Can you imagine this?
Well, and you know what's messed up is this guy questioning stuff. He'll probably end up getting kicked out of the bank, maybe arrested by the police because he's causing a disturbance. You know?
Yeah.
Like they treat the customer like they're a disease.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not today. Leaving. No, sorry, you're not getting any cash today. Of course, the real reason she's asking that question is because she's trying to avoid at all costs having to admit the fact that they don't actually have cash in the bank anymore. It's gone. And of course, there's a multifaceted group of reasons as to why it's gone. Number one, they don't want bank runs on large number of people when they come into a bank who want cash, right? So they don't want bank runs. Like everyone's like, wait a second. I think I want to get my money out of this bank.
Right.
Now.
Is this Greece? Come on.
Right. Well, remind our audience what happened in Greece.
Yes, Greece. The money was so deflated so quickly that you couldn't get any money out of an ATM more than once a day. Maximum amount was about, I don't know, $200 at the time. It's wild.
Yeah. And ridiculous.
This is in modern times, like within the last 5 years.
Right.
This happened.
And of course, so they don't want these bank runs. They don't want a bunch of people rolling up to the ATMs trying to get money out of these banks. One way, of course, to eliminate bank runs is to eliminate cash. Totally, which is what you're seeing. This week, the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, put out an ominous warning that cyber attacks could destroy the banking industry and cause bank runs, meaning people run to the bank to try to take out their cash all at the same time, but the banks don't have your money in the first place, so they can't give you any money anyway. This isn't a conspiracy theory. This, what you're looking at here, is the International Monetary Fund issuing this warning. The organization's latest global financial stability report warns that the size of extreme losses from cyber incidents has more than quadrupled since 2017 to a value of $2.5 billion. The report also claims the financial sector is uniquely exposed to cyber attacks. Well, it's a good thing we don't have any cyber attacks. Oh, wait a second. Widespread reports over the past 24 hours of entire 911 phone networks going down. Cyber attack on the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which brought down a bridge thanks to a barge hitting it. But yeah, we don't have any cyber attacks to worry about. So a large...
Which is currently being investigated by the FBI. You should say that so no one says, like, where'd you get that, Clayton? That's a conspiracy.
Yes, the FBI is currently investigating the Francis Scott Key Bridge 20 days after it struck the bridge and brought it down. Anyway,
I have a question really quick. So are they still, when they add to the monetary, like the money supply, are they still required to print what they're putting out, or are they just adding it in a computer? Because what I'm wondering is if there's actually a shortage on notes.
No. You know? It's a fraction of the actual money that's technically in supply, in circulation. The ones in, you know, the digital version of the dollar, there's only a fraction of that actually available in cash and coins that exists in the United States. The rest of it is digital.
Well, before the pandemic, when they changed the laws for deposits, it was 4%. So now, best guess is 1% of money that exists in our economy actually exists in paper form.
Can you imagine? So now the IMF, according to their bank runs note in this report, says the risk of bank runs. The IMF claims incidents in the financial sector could threaten economic stability if they erode the confidence of the financial system or disrupt critical services. For example, the organization warns that cyber attacks could cause bank runs where large numbers of customers withdraw money from the bank and strain its finances. The IMF warns. The IMF says their solution is an all-digital framework. Da-da-da. Of course. Scare you, make you fear terrorism and cyber attacks, and move you to an all-digital framework with no cash whatsoever. Here's their report. Digitization means the more financial transactions and services are conducted online, it creates more entry points and vulnerabilities for hackers to exploit. Weak corporate governance of cybersecurity means that some financial firms may not invest enough in some cybersecurity and may not have adequate policies or procedures to prevent, detect, or respond to cyber attacks. So this move towards digital infrastructure means that we also need to have the cybersecurity back end infrastructure. That's why you're seeing the rise of CISA in the United States, the cyber insecurity division within the United States government now, which is with this new FISA law and everything else, is the infiltration of American businesses so that the government has their hands in all of this.
Not just that, but on what you can say. CISA has said that they want to make it clear that they can downrank American citizens who cause panic in the banking industry. Okay. They have said that. We've shown you that.
I forgot about that. You're right. Go ahead, David.
And also, this is like, so there was a legislation that was put in place by big corporations for a certain sprinkler system in hotels. So it put a bunch of small mom and pops out of business. And this is the same thing. It's like these small companies aren't going to be able to afford this high-tech cybersecurity stuff that they're putting out there. So it's another way to squash small businesses.
Or small banks. Well. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
They think they can do is that is exactly this video we just showed you, is stop this kind of thing, plus conversations around it, because they know that bank runs are not going to spread in the mall or the town center. They're going to spread on Twitter, and then you will go to your local bank. So they think they can control it by taking control of the internet and free speech.
And we knew this was going to happen. They already told us to prepare for this all digital future. We've been reporting it here on the show. In 2019, the CEO of Bank of America, not a small bank, said that it costs them billions of dollars to have to deal with cash. They hate cash. They told us as way back in late 2019, they don't want cash. They want an all digital future. Here's the CEO of Bank of America.
We are the largest sort of card coming out of wallets, Google Pay, Apple Pay, Samsung Pay. That total was $4 billion last year. So 10 factor already on Zelle, and Zelle's growing at a faster rate. So the draw, it's growing 100% a year, basically, Zelle transactions are. So you're atomizing money, you're making it more available, just like the ATM did when you could go in and get 20s instead of 100s because you didn't want to stand in line just to get 20s, and suddenly 20s became the norm going out of the machine, and $40 was a lot, and you could go back. This has all changed the way money works, but there's both a tax on both sides, and driving down the cost is a preeminent thing. And we've been driving that cost down hard. Because we want a cashless society. It costs us $5 billion for checks and cash to move around our company.
You want a cashless society?
We are driving towards a faster, but we have more to gain than anybody in a sense from a pure operating cost. And so we're driving it, and the cost will come down, and everything's happening. And the costs are already very low. It's very efficient, very little fraud when you actually look at the volumes going through.
So we hate cash. We want a cashless society. Bank of America, CEO. If you want to understand, of course, how all of this is playing out, the European Union has already done this, already made it illegal for you to use more than $1,000 in cash to pay for anything, or you'll be fined. You could go to prison for it. Here was Christine Lagarde being punked on a phone call. She didn't know that this person wasn't a legitimate caller, but got her on camera to admit what is happening now with this new cash in Europe scheme.
There are many protests in Europe against the electronic euro. What is the reason?
You know, it's the beauty of Europe. It has different positions. If you ask in Northern Europe, for instance, in the Netherlands, they're quite happy to see the e-euro coming. If you ask a young German man, you'll say, yeah, fine. As I said, I don't want Meta, Google, or Amazon to suddenly come up with a currency that would take over the sovereignty of Europe. I don't want a foreign currency to become the currency of trading within Europe. So we have to be ready.
No, the problem is they don't want to be controlled. They don't want to...
Yeah, but you know what? You know what? Now we have in Europe this threshold above 1,000 euros, you cannot pay cash. If you do, you are on the gray market. You take your risk. You get caught, you are fined, or you go in jail. But you know, the digital euro is going to have a limited amount of control. There will be control. You're right. You're completely right. Mm-hmm. We are considering whether for very small amounts, you know, anything that is around 300, 400 euros, we could have a mechanism where there is zero control. But that could be dangerous. The terrorist attacks on France back 10 years ago were entirely financed by those very small anonymous credit cards that you can recharge in total anonymity.
So anything over 1,000, you're in deep trouble. You're on the gray market. Well, you're a terrorist.
But we're hoping for 350.
And think about what the CEO of Bank of America is really saying there. He's saying how much money it costs to move money and all that. He's talking about people. He's talking about employees. So you're talking in a cashless society, no bankers. You're probably like the loans and everything will all be like, okay, you just apply to a computer. It'll 100% all be run by computers, no people. And so then they can hide whatever they want, because there goes the potential whistleblowers letting us know things that are happening in banks.
Yeah, and AI. So you won't. Who are you going to complain to?
We get AI whistleblowers. Unless AI becomes so principled that it tells on itself, that'd be amazing. I've just come up with
that's
a new
novel. Direction it's going.
I love that.
Well, I like the angle that they're using. That it's like they're pushing. This is like the digital currency is a cybersecurity thing. When it's literally impossible for anybody to hack the $20 in my wallet, you can't do it. If I don't give it to you, you can't have it. But if it's all digital, they can just wipe it away whenever they feel like it, and it's just gone.
And that's why this is all part of the World Economic Forum's plan. Klaus Schwab and their move to digital and digital IDs and digital infrastructure. I've co-authored a new report. I want you to all check it out, by the way. And we dive deeply into the digital IDs. There's certain things we can't talk about here on YouTube because we talked about his family's dark history here in this report. I would encourage all of you to go check it out if you want to know what exactly is happening with the future of digital IDs, what the World Economic Forum wants for our money supply, and this World Economic Forum global influence. Go to redacted.inc/Klaus. We put this free report together that I've co-authored, and it's really eye-opening once you go into his family's dark, dark history, and of course what they want to do with us digitally to move us all towards a digital wallet so they can track everything that we're doing. Again, redacted.inc/Klaus. Go grab that free report. We worked hard on it. So this is what's happening. And I'm just stunned by this IMF report. Like this, right in line with all of these other cyber attacks that we're seeing right now. It's interesting timing that comes out a few days ago when all of this other stuff is happening right now before an election.
Yeah.
So let us know your thoughts on this.
I'm going to write that novel about how AI becomes the whistleblower. That would be amazing. Right?
I'll read it.
It's like the book Set My Heart to Five.
That was amazing.
It's a really great book. I've never done any creative writing, but you just watch. Maybe I will. Don't steal my idea, everybody out there. All right, we have more news to get to. We're going to talk about why Dr. Fauci deserves an award. Can't let that one go. We're also going to talk about the Polish farmer revolt. And hey, guess what? There's a new holiday, Free Speech Day, or First Amendment Day. Let's make that federal, although we have a long way to go before we get there. So all of that coming up. Well, the COVID purists have lost Dr. Phil. By COVID purist, I mean those who still believe that lockdowns and vaccines were necessary and that world governments just didn't know any better and they did their best. They knew better. And now Dr. Phil even says they knew better. And yet, Dr. Fauci was awarded the Stern Medal this week for his, quote, commitment to evidence-based decision-making and also speaking truth to power. Well, this is a medal for people who have made contributions to medicine. Here is the Irish Minister of Foreign Affairs, Michael Martin, giving him this award with a straight face, thanking him for speaking truth to power as an evidence-based decision-making. And you know, we at Redacted cannot let this slide. As Dr. Phil said on his show this week, they did know better. And let's just remind ourselves of a few ways that we know that. Social distancing, for one. Here is Dr. Fauci in 2021 talking about maintaining the social distancing and how important that was.
Right now is to maintain the physical and social distancing.
And here is what he said to Congress in January when he was asked where that whole 6 feet apart social distancing came from. He said, it just sort of appeared. I ask you, is that evidence-based decision-making? Okay, let's keep going. On the COVID origins, we've gone over and over again over how he manipulated the academic paper to shoot down the lab leak as a theory. I refer you to many, all the ones we've done about the Nature paper, so I won't repeat myself. He did many interviews shooting down this lab leak, such as this exclusive National Geographic article from May of 2020. He said that, you know, the evidence is very, very strongly leading towards that this could not have been artificially or deliberately manipulated. That's what he said about the evidence. Well, since then, several government agencies have validated the lab leak theory. Whistleblowers have said that they raised this with Dr. Fauci and his team as early as 2020. And now even he admitted in Senate testimony recently the same thing. The Senate Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic acknowledged that Fauci said that the lab leak theory is not a conspiracy theory. This comes nearly 4 years after prompting the publication of the now infamous Proximal Origin paper that attempted to vilify and disprove the lab leak hypothesis. Okay, so that's not evidence-based decision-making, is it?
No, it's not.
It's the opposite. Okay, let's move on to mask mandates. Fauci
originally
said that masks were not necessary, but then he went on to fully support masking and mask mandates, such as in this video he did with Mark Zuckerberg.
So I'm hoping that you can tell us a bit more about how your understanding of what we should do has evolved, and maybe some of the areas where your guidance for people around the country has changed.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you're dealing with something that's changing in real time, Mark, that's really the nature of science. You look at the data and the information you have at any given time, and you make a decision with regard to policy based on that information. As the information changes, then you have to be flexible enough and humble enough to be able to change how you think about things. And I think, you know, one of the important things that we're emphasizing right now that really evolved from a situation that did change is our insistence now on wearing masks. I mean, masks are very important. They protect you from giving infection to someone else.
Okay, a few things about that. Data at the time did show that places with mask mandates had higher rates of COVID. We knew this as early as 2021. Also, studies showed that mask wearing can make COVID exposure worse, given that you get a bigger viral load if COVID gets trapped in your lungs while wearing a mask because you can't naturally exhale any virus you're exposed to. This is called the Fogin effect. It may be Fogin, I'm not sure. Also, Fauci never warned us about the research that already showed that masks could lead to toxins and maybe toxics for humans due to chronic carbon dioxide exposure. Look at this study. This is a review of readily available research. Some of the research on the ineffectiveness and toxicity of masks is dated as far back as 2005. So we've known this for a long time, but we pretended we didn't. So again, is Fauci deserving of an award based on evidence-based decisions? I ask you.
No.
This data was available.
And the highest salary in the government?
Right. Okay, let's move on to natural immunity. When he was asked why people who had previous exposure to COVID were not protected and maybe not necessary to put a vaccine into their bodies, he said, oh no, the only way we know to how to deal with this, natural immunity or not, we just don't know. We don't know the numbers. We don't know about herd immunity. So we just have to vaccinate as many people as possible. He said that many times. Well, here is a congressional hearing just last year where Iowa Representative Marionette Miller Meeks, a doctor, talked to another doctor, Dr. Martin Kulldorff, about natural immunity and how that is not a secret.
Fanatics who wants to vaccinate every person in this country, even though they are children who has very little risk for it, even though they have already had the COVID, that has undermined the trust in other vaccines enormously, creating enormous vaccine hesitancy.
So not allowing their provider or physician to determine the risk and the benefit.
Yeah, and also people themselves, because people know that about immunity. We learned that in school. People know that if you've had a disease.
It wasn't until I came to Congress that I found out infection-acquired immunity was a novel concept.
Yeah, I guess we knew about it since 430 BC of the Athenian plague until 2020, and then we didn't know about it for 3 years, and now we know about it again. So
it's an amazing moment, yeah. Right? 430 BC.
Right. So did Dr. Fauci not know that? Did he, the nation's top doctor, did he not know this?
No, he absolutely knew it. He was on C-SPAN mm-hmm. in their morning show answering questions a decade or so ago on live television about the flu. And when caller called in and asked about the flu and asked, well, if you have natural immunity, and he said, no, that you absolutely do not need a flu shot. Then he said, you have the best form of immunity possible.
Right.
Right. You had the flu. You have the best possible natural immunity. Now you don't need to go and get a flu shot, he said, live on television.
Right. So we're just talking about policies right here now. Right. We're talking about vaccine mandates, mask mandates, social distancing. Because, again, let's look at this award for the Stern ceremony that was in Ireland this week. He's given this award for his commitments to evidence-based decision making, even though we can clearly see he made decisions for the American population, which were then extrapolated to the world, against readily available evidence at the time. So this commitment to evidence-based decision making, when did that happen? Well, I'm just so curious. I'm very curious when that happened.
Started this week.
Who's the power he's speaking truth to? Because he didn't speak truth to, are we the power? Are they acknowledging that we are finally the power, but no. He wasn't speaking truth? Like,
it's not you and me. We don't have any power, it seems. But no, I don't know who he's speaking to.
Right.
He was in cahoots with the power.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess that's an award for liars. Because I'm not going to aspire to it at all. Please never give me that award. If that's what this is for. Now, back to what Dr. Phil said, because I'm just so pleased to see him saying this to a mainstream audience on mainstream media. I can't play you the clip because it may be copyright, but I'll show you what he said. Here is a link to him tweeting about it, and you can see this clip for yourself, and I encourage you to spend 2 minutes watching it. He says, I'm not some conspiracy theorist. I'm saying we need to think about whether we're going to rely on science and how we're going to react when the government comes in and starts telling us what we can and can't do, because obviously the government never did rely on science. He says, I think we need less government. I think if they would step back, we tend to have a way to work things out. So they're going to be coming for Dr. Phil next, folks. They're going to say he is a conspiracy theorist, but he was applauded by his audience for saying this on mainstream media, and my jaw hit the floor. I'm not used to this.
I like based Dr. Phil. He did this past week. He did a whole breakdown of secret Chinese camps in the United States and military installations, and had a huge map with. I mean, it was crazy to see him like doing all of this new reporting. I'm like, what's Dr. Phil doing?
He did a big one on gender and canceled words. Like, he's
what's happening?
He's on a roll.
Yeah,
I've always appreciated his straight talking.
Anymore.
I know, back when Oprah backed
like,
him.
I don't know that guy.
Right? That was my question.
I appreciated it. Like, I read his book years ago when he is whatever the name of his book was. And, you know, it's like, you're fat because you want to be fat. You know, I like his straight talk.
Yeah.
You're fat. Stop putting food in your mouth. You're fat because you want to be fat.
I don't have preconceived notions about Dr. Phil really at all. And so I guess I'm looking at this. I'm like, huh? Okay. Yeah, he said that. He's saying rational things. There's nothing really that, I don't know, maybe I've missed the maligning of Dr. Phil in the past, but I don't have any. You're free to lay them on me, whatever your preconceived notions of Dr. Phil, I'll listen. But
I mean, I think when he's done the more salacious sort of Jerry Springer-esque style shows, you know, like the Maury Povich style, like paternity test kind of stuff.
Okay.
I think I don't know. I don't watch Dr. Phil. I don't watch daytime television. And hopefully you don't either. Hopefully you're watching our show. But anyway, I don't know.
I wonder if he'll do something on Ozempic that piss off Oprah.
Ooh, I'd love that.
Maybe he already has. Let me know what you think of that.
All right. We got more news to get to here on your Thursday. We're going to talk about the Polish farmers blockading roads into Ukraine. Why is that happening? Why are the Polish people saying enough is enough? You're destroying our country. And this is a NATO country, by the way. This is a big, big story that the mainstream media will not cover. Also, can we have a new national holiday? First Amendment Day, Free Speech Day on September 6th. We'll tell you where in one city. In one state where it's actually happening, we'll get there in a second. But first, right now is the best time of the year to plant a tree. If you're thinking about installing a new box hedge or a Japanese maple or a fruit tree or just some shrubs or some new flowers and plants in your yard, our friends at fastgrowingtrees.com will ship it right to your front door. And it'll show up nicely packaged, totally cared for. You won't get soil all over the back of your trunk while you're trying to pick it up at one of those big box stores. They're fantastic. I love them. I speak from experience. Again, we had a Japanese maple delivered from them. It came beautifully in a box. We planted it, and it is now massive. It's beautiful. And so you can do this as well. And you're going to get 15% off just by using our link. If you go to fastgrowingtrees.com/redacted, you'll get 15% off. And you're going to get buy one, get one free for a limited time as well. So you can check it out. Buy one, get one free and 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com/redacted. Huge fans of these guys. And what's great is when you go to their website, you'll look at a personally selected grouping of plants based on your zip code. So you tell them that you live in Idaho, you live in Ohio, you live in Iowa, a lot of I names and O names, or you live in Texas, they're going to find specific foliage meant for your region. They're not going to send you a palm tree in Montana. So, and it'll know exactly how to care for it based on your climate. And that's really, really helpful. So once again, 15% off, go to fastgrowingtrees.com/redacted. Well, something shocking is happening in Poland that we should all be paying attention to. Of course, the mainstream media is totally ignoring this story. Polish farmers are revolting right now against Ukraine. And this morning, Polish farmers started blocking the Ukrainian border at multiple entry points along the eastern border. But that's just one part of the story. It gets bigger than this. Joining me now is Dr. Mike Krupa from Warsaw, Poland. He's the host of Votum TV, and he's one of the smartest people in Poland. I'm going to give you that distinction, Doctor. Good to see you. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Clayton. I'm flattered, and I hope to live up to your standard.
Always. You always do. So this is an unbelievable. Let's talk about the Polish farmers piece first and the blocking of the border, and then I want to get into what the president of Poland released, which as a NATO country is really shocking, to call attention to the sort of the Western land grab that has happened in Ukraine. So what's happening with the Polish farmers at this hour?
Well, today, there are a subsection of the Polish farmers that were protesting thus far. These are mainly farmers from southeastern Poland, from the Subcarpathian region, announced that they will be blocking all border entries into Ukraine. Now, they stated that they won't be blocking buses, for example, or crucial transportation or just regular people going by, but there will be a major stoppage at all of these points, actually, between Poland and Ukraine, I think until 6 this evening. This is a one-off, but it's meant to be a sort of signal to the government that they are not happy with the current policy and that none of the fundamental issues that they were addressing in their last protests, the bulk of which took place in February and March, where we saw massive blockades of Polish cities and thousands upon thousands of Polish farmers coming out with very original ideas about conducting these blockades. These demands have not yet been met. As a matter of fact, the European elections that are coming up in June to the European Parliament, I think are only going to strengthen the unity of the farmers as they demand action on the so-called Green New Deal, the European Green New Deal, which will be devastating for Polish farmers and not only Polish farmers, but also the question of the continual flooding of the Polish market with Ukrainian cheap grain and other Ukrainian products that are basically dumped onto the market, and that the European Union, due to its anti-Russian fervor, let in because, well, they're Ukrainian. But as it turns out, and I guess we're going to be talking about this, they're not so much Ukrainian because their owners are not residing in Kiev.
Right. So the idea is that, oh, you're helping all these Ukrainian farmers, right? You're going to be able to push all of this grain through Poland into Europe, and everyone's going to have all of the spoils of this. But it turns out that's not the case at all. In fact, your president, who just met with Donald Trump, I think yesterday, actually, yep, released this really startling report on the state of Ukraine's agricultural land. And it exposed how so many of these foreign firms have taken over significant control of Ukrainian farmland. Basically, they own Ukraine. I mean, we're talking BlackRock, we're talking all of this. And so this is not, and it's, to me, it's surprising as a Westerner watching this as a NATO country. I mean, Poland joined NATO in 1999, a very strong NATO country, for a NATO country to basically say, Ukraine has been sold out to these NGOs. I find this stunning. How's this playing in Poland?
Well, you know, some people are saying that the president watches Redacted After Hours, so maybe that's where he's getting his ideas. But
hi, President of Poland. Nice to see you, Duda.
Indeed. President Andrzej Duda, if you're listening, how you doing? But the thing with President Duda is, in the last couple of months, he's been making a couple of surprising statements that would sort of lead into what he said, I think, 2 days ago on Lithuanian radio, because in February, he made a statement that really triggered a lot of people in Poland, a very sensible statement where he was interviewed by two interviewers on this new sort of dissident podcast, sort of the Polish Joe Rogan type of podcast, where he said that, yeah, at the end of the day, if you look at the history of Crimea, it was mostly Russian. And just for saying that, everybody went after him. And let's not forget that President Andrzej Duda is one of the most fervent, or at least was until recently, one of the most fervent proponents of Crimea being returned to Ukraine. As a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, a year or two ago, there was a conference held in Poland. It's called, I think, the Crimean Format, where everybody who is in favor of the return of Crimea to Ukraine gathers to find ways to reintegrate Crimea into Ukraine. And President Andrzej Duda spearheaded that. So his words on Lithuanian radio about who actually owns Ukrainian agriculture were fairly strong. They're fairly based, I would even say, because he came out straight and said they're owned basically by Western oligarchs, by Western capital, and we can't allow such unfair competition to enter into the Polish market, because we would basically have a crushing defeat for the Polish farmers and a total destruction of any agricultural industry in a country that is relying on agricultural industry for so much of its food, and not only in exports and so on. So I would guess that in a moment of truth, I think what President Duda was trying to do, I'm trying to always see this from the point of view of electoral politics, is possibly help out his former party Law and Justice ahead of the European Union elections coming up in June. I think the problem with Law and Justice right now is that because they signed off on all the crazy ideas of the European Union, including Fit for 55, the Green New Deal, and so on, they are trying now to distance themselves from all this because they have competition on the right in Poland, on the right side of Polish politics, in the form of the Confederation Party, which, despite many of its imperfections, has a fairly solid track record in criticizing and being properly Eurosceptic in this regard. So I think this might have been a signal from Andrzej Duda to sort of strengthen his old friends from Law and Justice to show that, you know, we realize what's happening with the farmers and we're with you. But at the same time, one can say that, you know, he's not up for re-election anymore. This is his second term. So maybe he really doesn't care what happens anymore. And he just spit out the truth just like that. Or maybe it could have been also a ploy ahead of his meeting with Donald Trump, because we know that, to say the least, Donald Trump's outlook on Ukraine, from the leaks that we're getting so far, including that report from the Washington Post from about 2 weeks ago, I think, about Trump's secret plan regarding Ukraine, Trump is not going to repeat the mistakes of the Biden administration. He's made that fairly clear. And maybe President Andrzej Duda, who will still be president when Donald Trump takes office, had to take that into consideration.
Yeah, it is amazing, though. But he's calling this out, and I think it's now shining a new light on it, because, as you pointed out, he's been very, you know, pro-Ukrainian. He's been very anti-Russian. And for him to come out and call attention to something that had sort of been swept away as maybe a conspiracy theory, I guess, really, I think, brings a new light to this in a really in a big, big way. Because now we know, as we saw Zelensky shaking hands with BlackRock in Kiev, you know, basically turning over their land to these Western investors who are going to come in and take over all of this land. And this is, I think, a big, big moment. Do you think, is he going to get any bigger pushback inside of Poland on these comments, do you think?
I don't think so. I think even, the left and the liberals in Poland recognize that there is a problem. I mean, the current government, especially the deputy minister of agriculture, one Michał Kołodziejczak, he's actually been pretty firm and one could say even radical, positively speaking, on this issue, addressing the case that, you know, we've been flooded with Ukrainian cheap grain, and a lot of Polish companies that claim to be Polish were actually using Ukrainian grain in their products instead of Polish grain because it was cheaper. He's actually talked about that and pushed that issue to the fore in his dealings with his Ukrainian counterparts. The question is, I think it'll all come out in June, because it'll show whether Law and Justice is still a viable conservative party for Polish farmers. That seems to be changing a little bit. There is a split going, I would say, two ways between Law and Justice and between Confederation. I think the older farmers are still sort of attached to the old party label of Law and Justice, whereas the younger generation of farmers, the more, you know, the ones more in tune to dissident media and to, for example, you know, media such as yourself and who speak, for example, English and know what's happening in the world, they might tend to vote for a different party. So I don't think he really didn't say anything new to a Polish audience. We all knew this. However, the timing is very interesting. And the fact that, as you said, Andrzej Duda was at the front, basically spearheading the most radical, delusional, Russophobic, neoconish, globalist approaches towards Russia. I mean, for every smart thing that Andrzej Duda says, there's at least three or four other insane things that he says, because after that famous meeting in Paris with Emmanuel Macron, where they discussed the potential of sending French troops to Ukraine, he came out of that meeting and the journalist asked him, you know, so what happened? And Duda, clearly shaken, a little bit frustrated, said, you know, the best thing for us would be if Russia didn't exist. So, you know, I mean, that's not the word of a mature statement. I mean, I can't imagine, right, you know, anybody, Viktor Orban, heck, I can't even imagine Joe Biden saying that, as a matter of fact. And that says a lot, I think.
Yeah, so that's high praise.
It's like a two, you know, a second grader whining that somebody stole his candy on the playground. Oh, it would be better if Russia wasn't there. We don't want Russia to be there. So that's Andrzej Duda for you, unfortunately. But, you know, kudos to him for having the guts, the cojones, to say at least a bit of truth 2 days ago.
Well, we'll be watching this very closely. We'll be watching what the farmers do here and what sort of movement happens along the border. Way to go for Polish farmers standing up for their way of life to all of this cheap grain that's being flooding into their country. Mike, great to see you. Dr. Mike Krupa, always great to have you here on the show. Thank you so much for your insights, as always.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Clayton. Have a good day.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mike. Always very, very smart. So we'll watch very closely what happens with these Polish farmers blocking these roads, and we'll see what sort of a message this sends to other NATO countries.
All right. Well, a new holiday we are proposing because one city gets it, Free Speech Day or First Amendment Day. We're going to tell you about that in a second. But first, maybe you want to jolt yourself awake with some 1775 coffee. They are our show sponsor. You can find them at 1775coffee.com/redacted, and you'll get 10% off because, of course, you don't want no wimpy coffee, right? Wimpy coffee is not for you. You've come here to be somebody who is exposed to uncomfortable things. You got to be wide awake for that, you guys. Well, 1775, that was the year that the world awakened to a new era. And now 1775 Coffee is bringing you coffee that embodies that revolutionary spirit. It's crafted with passion and precision. Their beans are ethically and exclusively sourced from the finest coffee farms of Bolivia. 1775 Coffee's farm-to-cup journey ensures the highest quality, authenticity, and sustainability from start to finish. I swear, just looking at it, you guys, I have a jolt. I feel like I'm going to start sneezing with my eyes open. So give them a try. You need to revolt against crappy coffee and have that farm-to-cup experience. Again, you get 10% off at checkout of your first order if you head on over to 1775coffee.com/redacted. Make sure you use our code redacted for 10% off at checkout. Once again, that's 1775coffee.com/redacted. All right. Well, September 6th, mark your calendar. That is now First Amendment Day in East Point, Michigan. Not because city officials love the First Amendment so much, but because they had to settle a lawsuit for taking First Amendment rights from their citizens. And now, as part of that lawsuit, they've been forced to declare September 6th First Amendment Day. This became a thing after former Mayor Monique Owens shut down what should have been healthy debate by her own citizens.
The hearing of the public is now open. You're not going to sit here and assault me, lady I never met. Don't call my name because I don't know what book you're reading, and I don't care. Okay, you know what? I'm gonna stop you right there, or we're gonna stop the council meeting.
Here, you gotta let her speak.
This is a personal matter. It's not about criticizing. You can criticize my policy. You stop it.
Let the people
talk. You stop it.
You are out of line.
You are out of line.
You're out of
point
of order.
You are out of line. Now, do you want to stand there and talk about your cats and your dogs in the community, but you won't talk about me?
Okay, I wonder why she didn't get reelected.
That's shocking. Also, I love her comeback. That sounds like something my 11-year-old daughter would say. The woman's like trying to speak. She's like, I'm here. It's an open debate. This is a council meeting. I'm giving you my point. And Mrs. Mayor, you're out of line. No, you're out of line. No, you're out of line.
Good. She really told that lady.
Yeah, good comeback.
It's the classic no you.
Yeah. Right.
You're out of line.
It can't fail. It cannot fail.
Right. Well, it turns out it is your First Amendment right as an American citizen to criticize your government. So those four people joined together to sue the city for shutting down their First Amendment right to criticize their government. They were represented by FIRE, which is the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. They are a free speech legal foundation. So anytime somebody has their First Amendment rights taken from them, which is very often these days, FIRE is the place to go to find yourself a lawyer. They say they are busier than ever. But as a result of this litigation, here's what this city in Michigan agreed to. First of all, they had a consent decree prohibiting the city from enforcing unconstitutional limitation on public comments, such as the video we just saw. They passed a resolution to apologize to these plaintiffs. They established September 6th as an annual First Amendment Day in East Point. I would love to see then the local schools getting a visitor from FIRE to talk about First Amendment rights. That would be amazing in the year 2024. Also, each plaintiff gets $17,910. A sum representing the year of the First Amendment's ratification, 1791, plus they get their attorney's fees paid by the city and a total of $83,000. That's how much that lady cost the city for treating her constituents like that. I am loving this outcome. I would love to propose that September 6th become a federal holiday, First Amendment Day. But we're not there yet because there's still a lot of work to be done. Here are some of the other things FIRE says that they're busier than ever with. Here's one that's just maybe kind of fun. We'll see what you think of this. College boys were punished for sending a Snapchat of a penis drawing on a pizza box. The university called the drawing a symbol of white male power and domination. Now, I looked for this Snapchat. I didn't find it. I'm very curious how they know that it was a white penis. If it was just a drawing, unless they used markers or crayons, why is the penis in general a symbol of whiteness?
Maybe if you don't color it in and it's just clear, the outline, because they just do the outline, it's automatically assumed it's white.
Hmm. Yeah, like David, when you draw,
what color
when
was
you
the
draw
pizza
them
box?
It's a good question. If it was red,
right? It was drawn on a Papa John's box.
Right. Is the penis by default white? Isn't that a racist thing to say? Don't you think?
I'm not going to touch that one.
Okay. Yeah. We'll leave it there. Let me know what you think about that in the
just
comments.
Just for the record, Clayton, not touching the penis.
That's right. I'm not touching that one.
Okay. Well, here's what FIRE says. He says, it is the boy's right, even though it may be slightly distasteful, to dick pick a pizza box. Can I not say that?
We'll find out.
Okay. You are supposed to be able to do that. Says student free speech rights do not end at the sensibilities of university officials. In fact, the Supreme Court established that the mere dissemination of ideas, no matter how offensive to good taste, on a state university campus may not be shut off in the name of conventions of decency. I encourage you to pause this screen and read the rest of this because of what Lenny Bruce comment below. He does use the F word, but it's interesting, right? Because we are speaking here even for speech we don't like and for the ability to criticize our government, which is being taken from us. Now, here's one that's a little bit more serious. Well, quite a bit more serious, I think. Something that FIRE is also watching. The University of Southern California, my alma mater, canceled a valedictorian speech because they are afraid that the girl who earned this spot will criticize Israel. FIRE does not represent this case, yet they may soon. This is Asna Tabassum. She has made social media posts against Israel and says that Israel is occupying Palestinian lands. So the school will not let her speak at graduation, as is tradition, because she earned the valedictorian academic award. The school provost said that this tradition must give way to safety. The girl said that when she asked the school, well, do you have any security that can deal with this and give me my right to speak? The university said this is not what they want to present as an image. And so she will not be given this award. There are calls for her to be allowed to speak, but so far the university is standing strong that they won't. Will they see a lawsuit around this?
What image are they wanting to project then? Like they don't want the image of free speech and that the valedictorian gets to give their speech. They want the image of what? Control? Of
absence? Yeah. I suppose.
Are they suggesting that if she speaks about a ceasefire that they are taking that that's going to be the perceived position of their school?
Yes.
Is that what they're saying?
Yeah. Yes. That they cannot allow her to speak for a ceasefire or speak out on behalf of the people of Gaza. It's not her right to do that, even though it is tradition that she would be able to speak as school valedictorian. So where was I? It does seem these days that free speech does not extend to criticism of Israel at all. Google fired 28 people for their participation in a 10-hour sit-in to protest the company's ties with Israel, which is interesting because Google responded when they had protests from employees about Black Lives Matter and the company's maybe tackling of racism. Google actually made changes to their business model and listened to protesters around Black Lives Matter. But when it comes to Israel, nope, can't hear
it. You cannot criticize.
Nope.
You cannot do it.
Cannot even be seen doing it, supporting it, can't hear that. So why some groups and not others get to protest? This is what you get when you allow woke capitalism inside your business. You have to choose the winners and the losers. And guess what? Everybody loses when ideology is the politics of your company. The only way to do this is to do what Coinbase did in 2021, when CEO Brian Armstrong sent an email to employees saying that they would be a crypto company and nothing else. They would not tolerate demands for social change or politics inside their company. No gender ideology, no representation, nothing. No campaigning with the company. That doesn't mean you can't talk about it on your own. That means you cannot demand it of the company. So they offered resignation packages to anyone who just couldn't deal with that, and about 60 people took it, and the rest of them just happily went about their business. Go ahead.
And then a week later, they were investigated by the SEC.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting, right? They're doing okay since, but, you know, the fire CEO, Greg Lukianoff, talks about, or not fire representative, Greg Lukianoff talks about how really this made for such a happier workforce and it lowers their exposure to litigation and it allows for free speech to actually happen, but not as a mandate of the company. So that's interesting. Let me know what you think of that in the chat below. Do you think those things are related, the SEC, the no politics and the SEC?
I mean, I don't know, but it's just convenient that suddenly, you know, the government wants to look into these companies, these crypto companies, wants to look into Coinbase when they take a stand against DEI and this kind of garbage.
Right.
You know, it's refreshing. It's certainly, if you read Vivek Ramaswamy's book, Woke Incorporated, it's a great read because he talks about why companies should be doing this, which is to remove woke politics from their business, right? They should be focusing on their business.
Right.
If they're a medicine company, they're a medicine company. And the way that Apple, you know, every like month, Apple has like some Apple.com, their front page is like this, you know, now we're honoring they do the whole, you know, the Black
Asian
History
Heritage
Month. Then it's Asian Heritage. Then it's all their virtue signaling on a regular basis, you know, and all of these companies do it. Google does it on a regular basis. And all of these big tech companies, Facebook does it on a regular basis, which is, you know, so it's refreshing to have some that don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this weekend in the Morris House, it's sports tournament week. Is that woke in any way? I'm declaring sports tournament pick up your kids weekend, and I will be doing busing of children all weekend. Maybe that needs to be a holiday.
If it's be woke if my son decided to join the women's team.
Yes,
the girls
I
team.
Suppose. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's not a thing.
We're not virtue signaling
in that response. But anyway,
you could wear. Are you done?
I think I am.
Okay. I didn't want to step on any toes. What I wanted to tell people is if you're going out for your sports weekend, though, we've got our store and we've got a whole bunch of new designs that our great team has just rolled out. You can go to redactedstore.com and grab your I Will Not Comply hoodies, your Redacted Rebel flag, if you'd like, your mugs and stickers, and our Friends Don't Let Friends Watch the Mainstream Media mug. That's a great way to start your morning. And David, you're wearing the
Support the Polish farmers with the farmer shirt. But yes, I'm in my
non-pacifist peace extremist. I love it.
Non-pacifist peace extremist shirt.
Do we have the photos, Philip, by any chance of, I guess we could stick them in here, of our brand new oil shirts? Got oil, the Canadian ones, and our American ones, which is, you know, if you want to support fossil fuels, you want to show the world that, hey, this is what got us to this point, is using using these types of fuels, then you can wear one of our shirts there by going.
It's the opposite of virtue signaling, yeah. Right? It's like a, what would we call that? We need a name for it because I'll think on that. It's not coming to me right now.
Middle finger signaling. I don't know what.
Revolution.
Antagonizing signaling.
It's antagonizing. Yes, it's definitely antagonizing, and it's passive aggressive, which are my two favorite things.
Yes.
Go to redactedstore.com and check it out, redactedstore.com. So that's going to do it for us this week. For our live streams, we will have content for you this weekend. Here's an interview. If you happen to miss it, it's gone viral, and I think it's a really, really good interview, really excellent subject matter, which is on the disappearance of the Malaysian Airline Flight 370. We have it right here on our channel under our Redacted Conversations playlist. Go check it out. It's a deep dive conversation with Ashton Forbes. That interview has now gone viral, certainly in the community that's been wondering what happened to this plane that disappeared 10 years ago. It's an eye-opening interview, so go check it out. And then we'll see you back here on Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, everyone. Have a great weekend. Bye now.